Hi, I'm Felicity, and welcome to We Are YA, The Check-In, a weekday chat with young adult authors. We're checking in and seeing how your favourite YA authors are doing at home during this very unique time, and of course, talking about their books. My guest today is Danielle Vega. Danielle is the author of the Merciless series and Survive the Night, as well as The Haunted, Burning, Breaking, and The Stolen Time trilogy, which she has written as Danielle Rollins. She lives in Brooklyn with her husband, daughter, and cats named Ripley and Jones. Danielle, welcome to the show.
Hey, hi, Felicity.
How you doing?
Doing pretty good. Doing pretty good. We're hanging in there.
Okay. And where am I speaking to you from?
I am in Brooklyn, New York.
Okay. And how's the mood there in Brooklyn?
You know, it's tense. We don't go outside a lot anymore just because it's been getting a little scary here. So it's tense, but people are looking for ways to bring joy into their normal lives. I think there's like a big thing with rainbows where people are hanging rainbows in their windows and they're doing something with the Empire State Building. It's like supposed to be a heart and there's a light show. It's very strange, but people are trying. People are trying to look at the bright side of things, I think.
And I think some people are looking for opportunities to sort of do the things that they wish they had time for. So reading is definitely obviously one of them.
Definitely.
We're talking to lots of authors. And for those people who are listening who may not have heard of you in terms of your books and stuff like that, first of all, where have they been? But secondly, tell me a little bit about the Merciless and the Haunted series, which you write for Penguin Teen.
Oh, totally. So my books are teen horror. And if you've heard of me at all, you've probably heard of the Merciless series, which was my first. It's my first series. And the Merciless is a book about teen exorcists. It's kind of The Exorcist meets Mean Girls. And then my most recent book is The Haunted, and that's my take on a ghost story. So it's about a girl who finds out that the new house that she moves into is haunted. And I guess my favorite way that somebody has ever described my books before is E. Lockhart called them cathartic feminist horror, which is my favorite thing in the world. God bless E. Lockhart. So they're horror stories, but girls and women are at the center of the stories, and they're really just about female stories and how those can be horrifying in even the best of situations. If you don't have monsters.
And The Merciless is actually one of those ones that does that so well in terms there's all these girls and some of them are the worst people ever. But in the best way, in terms of someone has to be a villain and things like that.
Oh, they're terrible.
They're terrible, but it's so brilliantly done because I think that's like it's like that classic, almost Whedon-esque thing of the friendships and things that you experience in your high school years in reality onto a map of the extreme. And yours is the horror map of the extreme.
Oh, you made me so, so happy by calling me Whedon-esque. Either you've done your research or you just, reached into my soul right there. Totally. So the Merciless is supposed to be about teen bullying and groupthink and these terrifying things that you deal with as a teenage girl. But we added, a little bit of a monstrous element to it. So, which is exactly what Joss Whedon did with Buffy the Vampire Slayer, is how can we make these very normal things that you deal with as a teenager, how can we add a monster and make them more symbolic or more metaphorical? So thank you. That's exactly what I was going for.
So. Yay. Well, it's what I read from it. So it was just classic. I think I grew up in an all-girls school environment. So for me, it was very, I related to it a lot because there was that element of, girls are that terrible to each other. We just, and we do that.
Even the good ones, even the ones who say they're going to be your friends, they can be terrible.
Totally. And we all do that, follow the leader of what ways the wind blowing. And yes, there are outliers and yes, there are people who are very good and stuff like that. But a lot of the times we don't quite have a sense of ourselves enough yet to stand up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not just a female thing, but I think being a girl and growing up with just these challenges, that's something that I wanted to write about and explore.
Yeah.
And I think I haven't seen explored in that way. So,
yeah. Well, I think particularly with horror, there isn't a lot of horror YA out there. And so I have to ask the question. It's surprising, but I have to ask the question of when you're writing it, are you really careful about how much horror you're putting in terms of either violence or scary stuff? Do you hold back at all?
No. I feel like teens just being in high school is horrifying enough that teens can pretty much handle whatever we throw at them. And I grew up on Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which I don't think is scary, but is that kind of original teen horror series, that original way of delving in and being like, look, this can be done like this, and this can be really interesting. But when I was a teenager, I was reading Stephen King because, as you said, there's not a lot of teen horror. When I was young, not to date myself too much, but when I was young, it was really R.L. Stine and Christopher Pike. And those series are fantastic. They're super fun. But I wanted something that was like marrying the two. You know, like I wanted the R.L. Stine, but like the Stephen King level R.L. Stine. Yeah. I wanted the horror to be at that level. You know, not to compare myself to two complete masters of horror, but like that's what I was attempting to do with the books is, you know, I wanted to write something that was really for teen girls and teen boys as well, but really for teen girls because I feel like they aren't always included in this genre. But at the same time, make sure that really writing at this other level, this level of like, I'm not going to hold back on the horror because I know if I wanted that when I was a teenager, there are other teenagers who were looking for that as well.
Yeah. Well, and I think also the way that girls are used, have been previously used in horror is as the prop or as
completely.
We save the girl. And this is about actually every girl in these books has dimension. Some of the heroes, some of the villains, some are caught in the middle.
Thank you. This is a like soapbox rant of mine that I'm so sick of. You know, we've gone so far in terms of including women's stories and girls' stories and writing stories for women and girls, and yet you just don't see the female villain that much. And it breaks my heart. I'm a Slytherin. I love a villain. You know, like they have the best wardrobes. They have the best lines. Like, why aren't there more female villains?
Yes.
So that was always something that I really wanted to do is work on writing not just girls who are heroic or girls who, you know, are the lead in the story, but also girls who are the antagonists, girls who are doing terrible things. Like, we're not just pretty props. We have lots of different interests. Some of those interests are evil. It's fine. Let's tell those stories too.
Do you get funny feedback on that? Because often when we see that women are portrayed as the villain, they're not as embraced or celebrated as a male villain. Do you sometimes get people messaging you saying, I wish the girls were a bit nicer or anything like that?
No, I think my fans are fantastic because I have not actually gotten that. I haven't gotten that for my horror series. I write, as you mentioned in my intro, I wrote a series called Stolen Time is the first book. And the second book, Twisted Fates, actually just came out in February. And it's a time travel series. And the lead character in that book, it's not horror and she's not a villain, but she's just sometimes makes choices that I think people wouldn't necessarily make. Like she can be a little selfish.
Sure.
And feedback on that, where people are like, oh, you know, Dorothy, like, what is she doing? She's like, she's making selfish choices because sometimes people are selfish. It's okay. But with my horror, I think people like it. It's like a guilty pleasure. They're like, no, I want to watch these girls make just terrible decisions, just horrible, horrible decisions.
I mean, I think especially with your horror stuff, it's on the package, it's on the cover, it's on the description. Yeah. We know what we're signing up for.
They know. Yeah. That's why they picked up the book.
With The Merciless, obviously, it was about the enemies within. With The Haunted, it's about the ghosts around you in terms of what was it like shifting a little bit?
Well, so with The Haunted, I really wanted to try my hand at the, you know, the traditional haunted house story. I feel like it's every horror writer's kind of, you know, rite of passage, just to write the haunted house story. So I wanted to do a new take on it. And, you know, coming from this place of wanting to tell stories about girls and women and wanting to do the Joss Whedon thing where I'm turning like some fairly standard things that teenagers deal with into, you know, a metaphor, a horror metaphor. I really wanted to look at sexual assault. And so the main character in the book, Hendrix, she had she just had a really ugly event happen in her past. And she's running from that. She's at a new school in a new town. And even though she's put all of this distance and space between herself and this thing that happened, she's still haunted by it. She still thinks about it all the time. She can't get away from it. And so in that book, in The Haunted, the ghosts are a metaphor for this terrible thing that she's had to deal with. And, you know, you can't fight the memory of something terrible that's happened to you. You can't fight a bad reputation, but you can fight a ghost. And so that's kind of where that comes from, is this idea of like, okay, you know, can you deal with the things that haunt you in your past in this more visceral way? Is that something that's, you know, is that something that we can explore? And so that's where that idea came from. And then, of course, there are the actual real ghosts and all of the really fun, scary Daniel Vega stuff that people like, the gore. But
I love that, like, message. I love that your, like, hallmarks are like, yeah, the gore. That's what I'm known for.
I know what people show up for. Y'all tell me on Instagram and Twitter what you like. We got you. It's still there. I didn't get weak.
The other novel we haven't talked about, which is probably another sort of deep backlist, but also iconic one that people talk about, like, in a Do You Know This One, is Survive the Night.
Yeah, it's crazy because when that book first came out, people weren't into it. I think people just weren't picking it up because they were really focused on The Merciless and when's the next Merciless coming out. And Survive the Night, we kind of snuck in there. But it's been funny because over time, it's been one of my best-selling books. It's the one that I think people discover later, and then they pull it up and they talk to me about it, and it's had more of a longer tail. So that's been fun and it's to sort see. Of
it definitely seems to be the one that the fans have over the years kind of come to slowly and adopted as like their. Like, are you a true Vega fan?
Yeah.
Have you done Survive the Night?
Well, no, you're not a true Vega fan until you've read Burning and Breaking, which I wrote under Danielle Rollins. But Survive the Night's kind of the one that you go to before then. It's like once you get into Survive the Night, it's like a gateway to Burning and Breaking.
Then you're signing up for the newsletter and you're in.
Then you're following me on Instagram. You're like
turning up at the doorstep at Christmas. Yeah,
yeah. It's like, wait a second, how'd you find my house?
Survive the Night, though, is the one that's in development at the moment for a film.
Yeah, correct? It is. So Tracy Oliver.
Tracy
Oliver and Pharrell's like production company. They came together too because it's because Survive the Night's about a music festival. It's like an underground party music thing. And so they decided they wanted to try and make it into a movie, and I fingers crossed that comes to pass. That would be fantastic. Tracy Oliver is a genius. And I mean, so is Pharrell. But so Survive the Night is it's about an underground like rave party in New York's subways, which is based on a true story. This actually happened. If you are really bored in quarantine, you can just go online and Google New York subway rave and find the photos that were kind of my original inspiration for the book. Because they're crazy. It's just crazy to me that there was this party that was thrown. And creepy because New York subways are disgusting.
Yeah.
I can't imagine why anyone would want to be down there.
No. I need to be very, very insane to want to do that.
Yeah. So the book is about a girl who just got out of rehab, and she kind of got talked into going to this crazy party with her bad influence friend. And as soon as they get there, like, they have a blast, but then the lights all go out, they get locked in there, and there's something down there with them, and they don't know what it is.
Oh,
who it is, or what it is, or what's going on, and so it's really... I think that this is why it kind of feels like more of a classic horror novel. It's really about them just trying to like get out of the subway and like get away with this thing coming after them. And it was one of the most fun books to write. Because it was really this kind of meditation on like the dark and the subways. And I'm a New Yorker, and so I would be writing the subways with my face like pressed against the windows being like, what are these really like? Like, how do I describe this? And so
that's amazing. And is there, in terms of like the film and stuff like that, is there any casting or anything like that that you know of?
Oh god, I never get to hear the fun stuff like this, so I haven't heard anything yet. Just in case you want to go on Twitter and tell me that you'd be perfect to play the role of Casey, I have absolutely nothing to do with it. There are always the people that you like watch become rising stars, and you're like, oh, Millie Bobby Brown would be just such a great Casey. So just in case Millie is listening to this, I'd be into
Millie
that.
Bobby Brown. Yeah. Oh, I like that.
Situation. Right. That's I feel like one. I just came up with that. I feel like that would be perfect.
Okay. From your lips to God's ears.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So. Well, and so speaking of things that are coming up, The Haunted has its sequel coming later this summer, which is The Unleashed. What is going to happen in The Unleashed? What are we unleashing?
Well, I can't tell you that. It's not great. It's not going to be good.
I mean, I kind of assumed. Yeah. With you, I assume.
These spoilers, but I can say that, you know, in The Haunted, you kind of get this this story about Casey is from Survive the Night, about Hendrix's new house. She moves into this house, steel house, and mm-hmm. it's super creepy. It's haunted. There's some stuff that goes down. And in The Unleashed, it's the follow-up to The Haunted. And it's less about the house and more about the town. So Hendrix has also moved to the town of Drearford, New York, which is made up. But she starts to realize that something's going on in the town, and it's not just about her house and this house that she knows is haunted. There's some other stuff going on. And yeah,
it's never just the house.
It's never just the house.
The towns are always, there's always, even if they're watching the house be creepy, there's always something happening.
Yeah, there's something weird going on with the town. And so I'm excited to kind of go beyond Steelhouse with the new one and introduce some new characters.
I was going to say, is there any new characters that you're excited for people to read?
There are some dead ones.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, there's a creepy farm, which I've never written a creepy farm before, but that was fun. But yeah, and then it's like kind of expanding on some of the original cast that you get in The Haunted. We get to dive into them a little bit deeper.
Oh, cool. Very, very exciting. Well, that comes out later this summer for everyone who's counting down the days. But I've had all my questions answered. I asked the fans, though, if they had questions for you before we started, and I got a lot. So I had to narrow it down. So I've just narrowed it down. I'm sorry if we missed your question. I've just narrowed it down to my favorite two, which is the first one is from someone you might know, a lovely woman called E.K. Johnston.
Fantastic.
Would like to know. Lovely Kate Johnston wants to know, have you ever scared yourself while writing?
Have I ever scared myself while writing? You know, I don't scare that easily. I don't even really get scared when reading other people's writing, which is terrible. I always think about, Stephen King talks about how he's scared of everything, and that's why he's such a great horror writer. And I feel like I must be a secondary horror writer because I don't get scared by anything. So no, I've never scared myself. I've made myself laugh, which is a little it's kind of a brag, but like this morning I was reading, I am working on a new project, and this morning I was reading the chapters that I'd done, and I hadn't looked at them in a while, and a joke that I put in there made me laugh, and I was just like pretty proud of myself, because I'm not people I don't think of me as a funny person, but sometimes I can be funny.
I think you are.
Well, thank you.
But also, that's good. If you can't make yourself laugh, then how do you expect anyone else
to
laugh?
It's the closest I can come to scaring myself. I also have a whole rant about how fear and humor are basically the same thing. They're like two sides of the same coin. So
Yeah. Actually, I will need to have that TED talk later.
Yeah. At some point, I'll give my TED talk about how humor and horror are the same thing.
Well, the other question is sort of related, and it's from MaxOCham24 from Instagram. And they wanted to know is, what's the scariest place you've ever visited?
The scariest place I've ever visited. Oh, man, this is, I don't know if I have like a good story about this. Like I keep trying to get my husband to go on our like road trip tour of the US where we just visit the most haunted places, but he's not into that idea because he is a scaredy cat.
I mean, I'm team your husband at the moment, because that sounds like a terrible trip.
Doesn't it sound amazing? We'd stay in all of the really creepy haunted like hotels and stuff. Like we could stay in the hotel that inspired The Shining.
I'm
way into it. I want to do it so bad. It's like my dream vacation. I visited catacombs in Paris. Like I visited the big haunted graveyard. And so that was cool. And I did the graveyard in Brooklyn too. There's Greenwood Cemetery.
Oh yeah.
It's really fun and haunted. But I guess like the scariest place I've ever been, a friend of mine, back when I lived in Seattle, we visited this really amazing park. It's not scary at all during the day. It's called Carkeek Park. And it's one of the most beautiful parks I've ever been to. It's like right on the water. It's so cool. But we went there after dark, and I can't remember why we thought it was a good idea to go there. I mean, it's not like we weren't like doing things we were probably supposed to
occulty
do.
Occulty like, things.
But yeah, so we like showed up and it was pitch black, and because it's on the water, it was the darkest place I'd ever been. And so we went, and so it's like bordered on one side by the water and on the other side by trees. And so we went up there, and it was just so dark. And I remember we heard something moving through the trees, and it was just this moment of like, why are we here? What are we doing? This is the stupidest idea.
Get out
this
right
is like
now.
How girls get murdered, like wandering into dark parks. And so we left then, but that's like one of the few times I remember, like as a young person, really being aware of my mortality is just standing in that pitch black dark park and not knowing who else was there and just being like, okay, this is stupid. We need to leave immediately.
Get out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I often think that's true. That's like your subconscious talking to you, kind of being like giving you a message that things won't go well.
Right. Like it was like a twig cracked, like, you know, like it wasn't anything that was like really truly horrifying. It was probably a fox or something, but it could have been a dude standing in the dark woods. I don't know.
Totally.
Yeah. I don't know if anybody here listens to My Favorite Murder, but they have things to say about going into the woods at dark, like at night. It's not a good plan. Don't do it.
I remember I was a young kid, and we were away in the country at this place we used to stay that was on the water, but we as a group of teens all went, let's do something fun. Yeah. And we walked, of course, let's go walking up this deserted country road that is pitch black.
Sounds like a good
no
plan.
Lights.
Sounds like a good plan.
And we're just going to be all like, this is who can go the furthest up the road and furthest away from this kind of place that we were all staying and kind of in. And like, you know, everyone kind of starts off really brave, really bravado, and then slowly that drips away. And we got quite far, and then we're all standing around just chatting because it was kind of boring. And then all of a sudden, out of the darkness, this guy lights a cigarette and goes, hey, guys. And we screamed and all
so
went running
scary.
Back.
Well, and if you think, if you think about it, horror stories originated as ways to warn people against doing exactly that thing. Don't journey too far from civilization. Don't go into the dark. Don't walk away from your people. There are dangers out there. That's why we tell horror stories. It goes back to the very origin of mankind. Like these are dangerous things. We need to know where our boundaries are. Sometimes you forget. Sometimes you forget and you wander off into the woods at night. And you're just like, okay, well, why did I do that?
Well, and you think it's a fun idea.
Yeah,
you just
it
kind
seems
of like,
fun.
Yeah, this will be fun.
Seems fun.
No, it was not.
It's not a good idea.
No. Well, speaking of people who are at home and not wandering into the night.
Yeah. Now you don't get to do that.
Staying at home. You can't do that. But if you're, are you someone who works from home regularly or not?
So I do about half and half. I'm a full-time writer, and I have been for, almost like 6 years now. Wow. I was about to say 3 years, and I realized that is no longer true. so I've been a full-time writer for a very long time. And I do about half time at home. And then the other half of the time, I used to have a co-working space that I would go into, which obviously is closed right now. So yeah, I've done a lot. So I've done a lot of work from home.
So what's your best tips and suggestions? And also, what's probably like your don't do's? What are the things that you've tried yourself and it didn't work for you?
You know, working home from full-time 24/7 didn't work for me. not really something that's going to work for anybody right now. I feel like the best advice is already online. Like the stuff that they tell you is already out there. It's like, have a routine, get dressed, even if it's just changing from one pair of sweatpants into another pair of sweatpants. Like take a shower if you're, you know, if that like helps wake you up and make you feel productive. So like that's all already out there. I think I would like to add to that, like you got to give into the chaos a little bit, you know, like you're not going to work from home and have it be exactly like working at an office. And I think that that's what really made me like, that's when I turned the corner, is realizing like, okay, it's okay that this isn't going to look the same as when I worked in an office. So for instance, you know, there have been times when the only way I can make it through like an outline is by being like, okay, I can watch Pretty Little Liars while I write this outline, but like I have to work on the outline while I'm doing it, you know? And like, it seems like, okay, well that's not going to be that productive, but it's better than staring at a blank screen, you know, and there's nobody around to tell me I can't do that. And Pretty Little Liars, by the way, is a really good show to watch when you're trying to come up with like really wacky out there ideas. And it's just like, it's a great way of telling you like, hey, you know what? Nothing is too crazy. Throw it in. See what people think. Because that show went off the rails in an amazing way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I embraced the mess. Yeah. I think.
Or like, you know, there were times when I had a copy edit to do and, you know, I just was feeling really cooped up. There were like, I needed to move. And so I would, you know, do 5 sun salutations and then start working on it and then do another yoga, you know, like just kind of like just to get myself up and get the moving in my head. And, you know, I just had a kid and the most recent project I just worked on, the only way I was able to finish it was, you know, when I got up at 6 a.m. and fed her and she'd fall asleep on me and I'd be like up at that point.
So yeah, you're like, go, okay. go.
All right. I guess I'm going to work, you know? So it's okay if it doesn't look the way you're used to work looking. Just have kind of an idea in your head of like, I'd like to get this thing done. Like, you know, 1 goal, 2 goals, like whatever you need and just work to that. And if you get there, great. If not, everybody is in the same boat as you are right now. We're all trying to figure out what this looks like. So
yeah, no, that's
give
great.
Into that's the actually, chaos.
That's really good advice. I think that's something that people need to hear a lot because I think it is so chaotic that people kind of keep trying to make it fit a box and it's not going to fit for a while.
And by the way, I am a crazy type A, competitive, like organized person. I am the person who would have been passing around that color coded like schedule that looks so pretty on Instagram. Like I am that person.
Yep.
So I get the desire to be like, oh, I'm going to make this perfect. I'm going to make this exactly like this thing. I get that. That's where this is coming from. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
Sometimes the perfect thing is just like, I got this thing accomplished and we don't really need to talk about how it got to this place. Like that's, you don't need to know that. That's fine. What I needed to do in my own time, we'll just keep that to myself.
Well, speaking of your own time, what are you doing in terms of book recommendations? What have you read lately that people should absolutely be reading?
Oh man, I've read so many books. So I feel like there are the books that I've been reading lately. And then there's like my big recommendation. That's my always recommendation, which is if you haven't read House of Leaves, being in a house is the perfect time to read. Like, especially if you're the kind of person who really wants to be scared. Like if you want to get scared to a next level right now, read House of Leaves while you're trapped in your house. It's the perfect book for being like isolated and by yourself and not leaving your apartment. You will scare yourself silly. And it's also what makes it perfect, I think, is it's the kind of book that you can't really read the digital form. You really need a physical book.
The hug. Yeah. Sit there with the book and hug it. Yeah.
No,
I don't know.
The book's laid out. So if you haven't seen House of Leaves, it's about the size of a textbook, like a college textbook. And it's hard to describe without like being able to show it, but the words like spiral around the page and they flip upside down and it's crazy. So you need the physical copy. And right now I think is that you can basically check around your neighborhood, see what independent bookstores are still offering delivery or offering curbside pickup or whatever they're doing, and put in an order for House of Leaves and just support these bookstores that are struggling so much right now. So that would be my number one recommendation for something to do.
Good one. I like that.
If you're bored,
it also
takes a minute to read. Like it's not a short, quick book. It takes a minute to get through it. And you've got time right now. So just commit to being so scared you're going to wet yourself. And by the way, I always say I don't get scared by things. This is the only book that has ever scared me.
Oh, which makes that even more terrifying for the rest of us.
So if you really want to be scared, that's my recommendation. I also pulled out my old a copy of Shirley Jackson. We Have Always Lived in the Castle, which I've never read. And so I'm gonna get into that and just do some classic horror.
Yeah, good ones. And anything new? Anything that you've just read that you've loved?
Anything that I've just read. I mean, I'm so picky about books that it's really hard to be like, pull this out and be like, this one was amazing. I just read The Need, which is an adult novel. And it was marvelous. It was just so good. It's also horror. If you're a grown-up person who likes grown-up books about then I would suggest The Need.
Perfect. No, this is good. We definitely have grown-up listeners, so I'm sure they'll expect a good horror recommendation from you. So that's we've fulfilled that.
Yeah, that one was
fulfilled
that's some slow burn horror right there, but it was unexpected and very cool.
And so what about in terms of TV shows? Do you watch horror TV shows as well?
You know, I'm watching Tiger King right now along with rest of the
world. Oh my God.
So I don't know if I would call that horror. There are horrific elements. I don't even know if I would recommend that. Like, it's a very strange show, but I've definitely been into it. Also, this is possibly a weird recommendation, but I haven't heard anybody talking about Stumptown, which is like some random detective show that's just amazing. So if you're not watching Stumptown, you should maybe watch Stumptown. It's great.
This is the little show that's getting a lot of recommendations lately, because you're about the third or fourth.
That's so funny. Oh, I should have listened to the podcast.
And said, no, no, it's fine. It's this classic thing where like everyone's like, I don't think anyone else has heard of this one. And every single person is just going, Stumptown? Like, and like almost with a question mark, like, is anyone
It's got Jake Johnson in it. And we all have a crush on Jake Johnson, right?
Yes.
Like, he is my boyfriend.
But also like bisexual Kobe Smulders, which is the thing that I was like, I didn't realize. So I'd seen the trailers for it, obviously. And I thought, I'll get to that. Looks like a fun detective show. And then someone said, no, it's a bisexual detective show. I'm like, excuse me.
Well, and it's also like, what I think is so great about it is it's not like advertising itself. Like, oh, we're the bisexual detective show. It's like, no, she's bisexual. That's just a part of her. She's just an actual interesting character who's fully formed and who we've actually like, you know, put out there. She's not one note. So I think that's what I really love about it. And Kobe Smulders is just so fantastic. And I love her whenever I see her in anything new. So this was, it's basically like a grown-up, grittier Veronica Mars.
Yes, you know? That's a great comparison.
Like, that's what it is. Yes. It's like what Rob Thomas wanted the Hulu show to be, but it didn't quite get there.
Don't tap me on that one. Don't. Let's not talk about that, because I will go off.
Like, because you didn't like it or because you did like it? Because I loved it. I'm a hardcore old school Veronica Mars fan. I'm in this place where it's like, he can do no wrong. So I've heard all of the reasons that people are like, oh, it wasn't that good. And I'm like, you're right. But I still loved it. I still wanted to watch it twice.
I was a Kickstarter fan for the movie. Like, I had the t-shirt. I had everything. There was just something about it that I won't say what it was in case people haven't seen it, but there's a plot point.
No, I know what you're talking about. You don't need to say. We all know. Yeah. I don't like that either. But I understand as a writer why he did it, because.
Well, I know what he wanted to do. I just wish he'd done something maybe even more brutal and like not. Okay. So I'm going to spoilers if you haven't. Skip ahead, everybody.
Yeah.
But the death of Logan Eccles, I don't think was a good choice. I think they should have broken up, because I think he could have said, I have outgrown where you are and you are still regressing, and I'm just not, like, I'm not there and I'm not willing to be your punching bag. Because that whole relationship in that season, the way it played out, where the violence that she needed to get that energy and that passion from him to make that work, I think he had, like, they should have broken up. And I was a fan of them as a couple for, like, my entire life. But I think...
Here's the thing, though. It's, like, to get the hard-boiled detective. So I actually did my capstone in college on hard-boiled detective and film noir. So I just have so many.
So now you're going to completely mop the floor.
I'm not. I promise. I'm not that smart. This was a very long time ago. But to get the hard-boiled, to get the broken part of her personality, which, and there have been so many internet breakdowns about, like, why do we need our women broken? And it's like, there, I totally understand. I totally agree with you. But specifically talking about the detective character and where that comes from, it comes from a place of, we need the detective to be broken so that they can then go into the seedy world and, like, you know, make it, like, prettify it, like, make it make sense, but they still have this fundamental thing, this fundamental flaw that they can't fix. And in season one of Veronica Mars, that was Lily Kane. You know, that was her trying to make sense of her best friend's brutal murder. And we've just moved so far past that it comes to a point where it's like, well, why is she still broken? What has happened to her that is so bad? She's a pretty white girl. Like, nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing has happened to her that is so bad. And so I understand why he was like, okay, well, we'll kill Logan. We'll kill her true love. And that will break her again. We needed to break her again. It wasn't just about moving Logan out of the picture. It was about, how do we get her to be this character of the hard-boiled detective when she should be healing by now? She's a grown-up. And I just wonder if we're not able to get there with Veronica anymore, because her story has had a full arc now multiple times.
Yeah, that's a good way of actually, see, look at that. You've solved it for me now, because that's probably why, that's what my issue was it with.
Yeah.
And I also think that ties into my other problem with it. It felt like he wanted Veronica somewhere else.
Yeah.
Rob the creator, because so much of the beautifully realized world of Neptune, with, you know, the lower socioeconomic parts of it, wasn't shown a lot in the latest Hulu series. That I was kind of like, where was that we all loved in the class warfare and that kind of, you know, 1% versus the, you know, the 09ers versus the rest of everybody.
Well, and that's kind
of her core in the middle.
Yeah, that's kind of the problem, because it now, when we're looking at that kind of a story, it no longer makes sense to have a, you know, beautiful blonde white girl be the, you know, the protagonist in this story that's about class warfare. Like, it no longer makes sense in this current environment. It's so much more interesting to look at like Weevil and what's happening with his family.
Yes.
Or to even just like go to some of these other places. And Veronica Mars can't go there anymore. She's the hero we needed in the early 2000s, but she's not the hero we need right now. We need different heroes.
Danielle, you have solved this all for me right now.
I think about this a lot.
No, I'm loving that this has turned into like how Veronica Mars season Hulu was not so great, but maybe it was so great. Maybe
I mean, it's just, final, it, we, you know? we needed closure. And I think now having Stumptown come in and you have this very different character, we're seeing the ways in which we can continue taking the hard-boiled detective character and transforming her. And having her be bisexual, I think, is helping. But like, I want, like, where is our woman of color hard-boiled detective? Like, where is she? That is who I want to see. Where is our, you know, like, Stumptown does this great thing where she has a little brother who has Downs. But where is our differently abled hard-boiled detective? You know, like, there are so many different things that you can do with this trope that I haven't seen. Like, if you are listening and you are an aspiring writer, like, this is a trope that is never going to die. It is going to be brought back again and again and again. And if you can figure out how to do it in a fresh way with a fresh voice, like, there's a lot of room there to play.
I love that. What a great suggestion.
Yeah.
I
love
all of that. It was amazing.
Although I will warn you, mystery is really hard to write. It is really, really, really. Yeah. I have tried so many times. It is freaking hard to write that. And I think that's why Veronica Mars just stands as this shining beacon, because season one of Veronica Mars, the mystery there, is one of the best, like, most perfect seasons of television I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And so, like,
no, fair.
Should be watched as like a class in how to perform a perfect mystery. But it's hard. It seems easy. It's not. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, 100%. 100%. Well, so obviously, if anyone's not watched Veronica Mars, then you can go back and watch that.
Always worth it.
And do you listen to any podcasts?
I listen to a couple. I've never gotten super into podcasts, but like, I love My Favorite Murder. Which it's like, why even recommend that anymore? Everybody's listening to it. So like, that's always. I've been listening to, weirdly, this is so out of left field, but I really like Dax Shepard's podcast, Armchair Expert.
Everyone loves that.
I mean, I guess it's not that out of left field, because we just spent, you know, a half an hour talking about Kristen Bell, and this is her husband's podcast. So I guess you can see the line of how I got to Dax Shepard. But yeah, so I really like Armchair Expert. Yeah, then the other one that I listen to is You're Wrong About, which...
Ooh.
I don't know if a lot of people listen to this, or if I just am not talking to people who listen to this podcast, but it's these two journalists, and they take on really popular not phrasing this right, but it's like really well-known things that people get wrong.
I heard about this one. Now you triggered it. I remember it recently. Someone was talking about it in reference to, they explain the coffee pot McDonald's lawsuit.
Right. Yeah.
That everyone kind of goes like, oh my God, that woman sued because they spilled hot coffee on her. Not understanding that the coffee was wildly overheated.
Yeah, like, she got like third degree burns. Like, it's like a different story than the one that we have. So it's like these
been
really
told.
Famous stories that people widely get wrong. So the one that I just recently listened to is the one about the Satanic Panic, which I actually listened to because there's like a little element of Satanic Panic in my new book, The Unleashed. And I wanted to know like where it came from and where people, like why they started this, you know, why there was so much hysteria around it. And it's fascinating because you get the whole like, well, this was patient zero in the Satanic Panic, and this is where it came from, and this is why people lost their minds. Right. It's just so fascinating. And so they cover things that you've heard of. They also do, like, Tonya Harding was a really interesting one, obviously, because yeah. I, Tonya came out, and you're just like, oh, my God, I did not, you know, I was a kid when the Tonya Harding, Nancy Kerrigan thing was happening, and I did not realize, like, just how wrong the story that I had been told my whole life was.
100%.
So they do all sorts of really big, crazy stories that you feel like you know, but obviously, like, it's the title of the podcast, you're wrong about them. And then little things that maybe you hadn't really thought about that you just kind of, like, they have one on gangs and gang culture that blew my mind. It's a really fun podcast. So I highly recommend that.
That's going up my list for sure.
You should totally listen to it. It's so good.
I feel like I would get right into that.
Yeah.
And now, do you have any, are you a gamer at all?
Not really. I'm bad at games. I get really competitive and I don't like things that I'm not instantly good at. So
this doesn't surprise me at all.
I really can't do anything except for write now and, like, read books, because books aren't competitive.
Also not a bad thing.
Yeah, it's fine. It works out in my favor, but yeah, it's bad. We've tried to play, like, ironically, we have pandemic and we've tried to play that, and I just am bad at it and can't figure it out. So
I know I'm not a gamer because I was always the person who just kept trying to add to the bank in SimCity and just keep tapping up the funds, and they were like, yeah, but you're gonna have to tax, and I'm like, I don't care, just let me build stuff.
No, like, back when that was, like, the cool thing that everybody was playing, I just couldn't figure it out because I just wanted, like, my Sim character to write a book. And so I would just have her, like, sit and write a book all day. And the game would be like, no, you need to do other things too. She's gonna die. She needs to eat. And I was like, no, like,
she's fine.
She's gonna just write a book. And so, yeah, just to
oh
give
my
you,
God, I love that.
I'm kind of a crazy person. I can't do games. So,
well, I love that. That's that your characters are stuck in their SimCity world writing their own books. So that's exciting. Yeah,
except they keep dying.
Well, I mean, I feel like that's you killing them. So,
yeah.
Basically, it's on brand.
Pretty on brand for who I am.
Well, Danielle, thank you so much for joining
check-in
today. Yeah. Danielle Vega's books, including her latest release, The Haunted, are available from all bookstores. And if you're at home, they're also available in both ebook and audio on your favorite platform. You can follow Danielle on both Instagram and Twitter at Vega Rollins. And tomorrow on the show, I'm joined by Tochi Onyebuchi, the author of Beasts Made of Night and War Girls, who's going to talk about fantasy versus sci-fi, being on The Daily Show with Trevor Noah, and more. We'll see you then. Bye.